The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Bazan.
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 Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
This is Bazong, the Bizarre and Weird Fiction Podcast, with me, your host, Mr. Frank. Welcome back, Zongers. It's so wonderful to see your smiling, shiny faces once again. And it is also my pleasure to be able to talk about our sponsors this week. I always enjoy talking about subculture, corsets, and clothing. So I want to take a moment and talk to you about them. Subculture Corsets and Clothing offers corsets, rockabilly, steampunk, gothic, pinup, retro clothing, shoes, and accessories. Subculture corsets are the real thing, all steel-boned, not the cheap plastic ones that lose their shape after you wear them a few times. Their corsets are extremely well-made and will last for years. Some of the brands offered at Subculture are Hellbunny, Seven Deadly, Red Queen, Black Label, Bait Footwear, Voodoo Vixen, Punk Rave, Killstar, Restyle, and so many, many more. You know, Zongers, I like to peruse the Subculture Corset website while I'm doing their promos lately. And this week is no different. I went over there to see what was going on, and I went through the categories, alternative, and one of the options came up, alternative bottoms. And I was like, ooh, alternative bottoms sound sexy. So I clicked on alternative bottoms, and oh, the sexy that's going on there. First of all, that's where you find their kilt. This is a badass rock and roll Outlander kilt. But I'm also checking out this week the Westworld black unisex pants. Whew, there are so many straps and whips and chains and straps and lacing and tightness. Ooh, Zongers, I'm getting a little hot under the collar. Let's get back to the Subculture Corsets and Clothing. Don't forget to go visit them. subculturecorsets.com, or if you're in Jacksonville, Florida, you can see them at the Avenues Mall, just a half mile off of I-95. So if you're into cosplay or going to cons and you haven't visited Subculture Corsets and Clothing, you are missing out on great products at great prices. Visit their site now, subculturecorsets.com, and use the discount code BAZONG for 10% off your entire purchase. Zongers, say it with me. Buy more, save more. That's subculturecorsets.com, or visit their store at Jacksonville, Florida's Avenues Mall. I highly recommend subculturecorsets.com. You know what else I highly recommend, Zongers? Reading Bizarro. That's why week after week we talk to everybody who's anybody in Bizarro and Weird Fiction, this week being no difference. And the theme this week, this theme we've been kind of hitting on inadvertently for the past few weeks and months is we're talking to another Bizarro writer from overseas. This time, going down under, digging into Australia, and bringing out S.T. Shane Cartledge this week. Zongers, author of The Orphanarium, has just come out with Eraserhead, and he has his own book launch party coming up in just a couple of days, March 31st. If you're listening to Bazong straight out of Australia and you're in the Perth area, you're going to want to check out ST Cartledge and go down and visit him at his book launch party. But it was wonderful to talk to him, get a good idea of what's going on, the Bizarro scene in Australia. At least Perth, Australia is a gigantic place. So we kind of got a feel for what's going on in the Perth, Australia area. What's the experience been for Shane as far as obtaining Bizarro books and getting his own Bizarro work out there. It's a big part of our conversation. And then, we just talk about Shane's new book, The Orphanarium, his process, and what he's been working on outside of writing the Bizarro. He's doing some publishing work, and as I came to find out, I wasn't actually aware that he's big into poetry, and he sort of uses poetry as his gateway to putting out or presenting his other Bizarro work out there in the world. All very good, fun stuff that we learn about Shane Cartledge this week on Bazong. So I shall acquit rambling zongers and let you all have at Mr. SD Cartledge. Give us the gong, King Kong. I'd like to welcome to Bazong this week a man who has just had his book, latest book, come out with Eraserhead Press, and he's here to talk to us all about it and all things bizarro. Please welcome to the show this week, straight from Australia, Mr. Shane Cartledge. Shane, welcome to Bazong.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. I'd like to start off this interview, sir, since you're out there in Australia. I'm interested. How did you come to find Bizarro?
I started writing on my own before I came across Bizarro, linking up with a few writer friends locally. They kind of picked up that I was doing something a little bit weird, a little bit unusual, and they linked me to a short story by Carlton Mellick called Candy Coated. It was up online on Vice, and I read that, and I was hooked from the get-go. I looked up more of his work, came across Satan Burger and pretty much everything else that Eraserhead were doing at the time. And I think that was about 5 or 6 years ago now. I picked up Satan Burger, picked up Lost in Catbrand Land by Cameron Pierce, and then my collection grew from there, and I started writing more Bizarro.
So you weren't, what you were writing previous to that really wasn't, you know, Bizarro driven? It was it always weird what you wrote, or was it really discovering Bizarro that put the Bizarro into your writing?
I always wanted to do something a bit different, but I think finding Bizarro gave me the comfort to know that there were other people out there that were just going nuts with their fiction, and that kind of gave me permission to let loose and just throw all the rules out the window and have some fun with it.
And excuse me, you took to that, obviously. I guess the first thing you wound up in Bizarro wise is the magazine of Bizarro Fiction. You landed a piece into that.
Yeah, that came out, I think, the year after House Hunter came out. So, I had the new Bizarro author series, and then that gave me good connections with a few of the guys there. My short story, I think it was Whoville Maximum Security Prison, that was part of Eraserhead Press's Pitcher-Palooza a few years back. So that was when they were looking for more material pictures from Bizarro authors, and they picked that up as a short story. I remember there was other ideas from Pitcher-Palooza, like Steve Lowe's I Am Sloth. I can't think of any others right now, but quite a few of those books actually got written and came out. So I was, thrilled to be a part of that little experiment at that point in the press.
That's really cool. I like to hear that the books that came out of those Pitcher-Paloozas. Obviously, I've heard about them, and it sounds like that's a great way for them to get material, because a lot of great Bizarro books have come out of that.
Yeah. Although I think they were a little bit, it was a little bit hectic for them, or from what I understood anyway, which is probably why they haven't done another one anytime soon. Because there was just so many different authors throwing out a lot of ideas, and a lot of them were just riffs on the same ideas over and over again.
Right.
Motherfucking Sharks was another one. I absolutely loved that book. I'm pretty sure Cameron Pierce pitched that, and then he passed the idea on to Brian Allen Carr. I was so stoked when that one came out.
And that won the Wonderland Book of the Year award, correct, that year that it came out, I believe?
Possibly, yeah.
So with your writing, you tend to take that like dream state approach, it seems, and that's something I was taught when I did a workshop through Garrett Cook, is that the getting your mind space into a dream state is Is that something you honed through somebody like Garrett or something, or is that really your natural process in writing and the way your style comes out?
Yeah, definitely Garrett was a major influence in that. A couple of my books actually came out from his workshops, or definitely House Hunter did, and I kind of built from there. I've always kind of gravitated towards that sort of stuff, but definitely having the kind of mentor process to push it further was, definitely a big thing for me.
Is it a challenge for you to get into that headspace and be able to stay there, or you feel that sort of thing comes natural to you when you're writing?
I feel like it comes fairly natural. It's just a matter of, stripping all those distractions away and getting into, when I've got that idea happening, just making sure I've got the time to sit in front of the keyboard and put those words down. So long as I've got the time to do that, then it can just happen. I can flick that switch on and write away.
That's nice to do. I know I kind of struggle to maintain that headspace, to be able to stay that detached and let the world, be weird and let the rules go. It's so I constantly struggle to, allow that detachment and let things be weird. And it's almost like I have to just remind myself and stay aware of being in that space, because so often I become hesitant when trying to be like write dream like stuff, because it's like, no, that can't possibly be. And you really have to force yourself, or I have to force myself and teach myself that, just to let the words get on the page and allow that disconnect from reality to happen. And for me, that seems like a constant struggle, a constant thing. It must be nice to allow yourself to get in that space and just flow free with it.
Yeah, I think definitely on the other side of it, you could argue that going too far into that headspace, you might lose a lot of readers that way, in that they can't readily relate to the work.
Right.
Which is, one thing that's so great about Bizarre is that a lot of the readers are really accommodating to that sort of narrative style.
Yeah. It's the book. Reading books, like you said, like that, sometimes you lose a reader. And when it does really become extremely disconnected like that, I can have a problem with it. But there's a lot of people that seem to enjoy that complete detachment. Sometimes, that non-linear plot structure and just real weird, et cetera, loose prose, that type of thing is rough for me, but there are people out there that do enjoy it. But your stuff never really goes that far as sort of experimental fiction, you would say.
Yeah. At times I definitely feel like I'm kind of heading in that direction, and I've got a few works and projects that I sit down and look at them and try to figure out where they're going and if it's actually going to be, logical from a reader's perspective. So sometimes I need to reel myself back in and try to figure out where it's going and how to make it readable and enjoyable for my readership.
Now, looking at your entire body of work, I'd ask you, do you consider everything you write to be bizarro on some level, or is there stuff, because you tend to have sort of a sci-fi kind of thing you get into at times, but is it always bizarro, or sometimes you write outside of bizarro too?
At the moment, I definitely feel like everything I write is within the realm of bizarro. My science fiction stuff, if you hand that to someone that's like a sci-fi purist, they're not going to like it.
Uh-huh.
It's very much a blend of genres. So the Orphanarium, for example, there's a lot of sci-fi elements in it, but there's a lot of fantasy and surreal elements as well that would take those sci-fi elements into like an unstable sort of environment for those sorts of readers, if that makes sense.
It sure does make sense. And the other thing too is like you're not just published with Eraserhead. You have several books under several different presses. So you're spread out. That made me like ask the question if sometimes you're not being as bizarro at sometimes and others, like a Kaiju Canon comes across as more like a straight up Kaiju giant monster type of book, but there's always that element, I guess, to bizarro where, like you said, the purist might be turned off by those types of stories.
Yeah, I think with Kaiju Canyon, that would be my least bizarro book.
Mm-hmm.
I have had people who've read that and told me, well, it's not all that weird, which in a way is good because that way it'll allow readers to access my or get into my work a little bit easier. So I guess like in a way, like, yeah, in a way that's sort of, like a bridging, book to, access some of my more surreal works.
Mm-hmm. But you're never consciously writing to a certain level of bizarro for, so I can appeal to a greater audience. You're just writing the story as it's coming out, right?
Yeah, definitely. Even with something like Kaiju Canyon, I did try to throw in elements there that you wouldn't expect in a typical Kaiju book. Although I think because of the mindset that I got into when I was writing that, I was focusing purely on more so like the plot and the characters as opposed to the setting. So I think that's probably why that one would be a little bit more accessible than, say, Day of the Milkman or The Orphanarium.
Now, you also have a story in this a four-author collaboration called The Four Gentlemen of the Apocalypse. I think it's kind of an underrated bizarro book, but you're in that book with – you got G. Arthur Brown, you got Dustin Reed, and Douglas Hackle and yourself. How'd you wind up working with those other three guys on that project?
Well, I've had a bit of a relationship with J. Arthur Brown going back since we were published in the New Bizarro Author series back in 2012. So I've kept in touch with him over the years, and I can't remember if he approached me or I approached him, but we got talking about projects that he was working on, and I had this story that was a good fit for him, and he seemed to really like it, so that worked out really well for me.
Do you find the book I know it's hard for you to, obviously you think it's a wonderful thing, but do you think it kind of went a bit unnoticed?
Definitely, yeah. It's hard with something like that because we get all similar-minded authors within our own community, and we go, it'll be great. Like, we'll get all of our combined readerships and hopefully pick up a few new readers for like each one of us. But it's difficult because I think anthologies are a little bit of a hard sell at times, especially when you've only got the four authors within our own community, as opposed to like something that's got a lot of big name authors as well as a bunch of independents.
Yeah, I see where, but this was almost like four novellas too.
Yeah,
a little shy of novellas, but yeah, longer pieces, not necessarily like a short story anthology either. I thought it was brilliant. I had a lot of fun reading it, but yeah, it just did feel like it didn't get that widespread notice. I was kind of surprised by it because it is a quality piece of work.
Yeah.
So I got to ask you, you're obviously in Australia. How do you find the bizarro scene in Australia? You think it's vibrant, growing, or it's just a big place and it's hard to find people who are into bizarro there?
It's definitely a big place, and it's difficult to find new readers. I think one of my fans that does live locally, I came across him through one of the Bizarro Facebook pages. And the rest of the time I just try to do mainly poetry readings because there's quite a vibrant poetry scene here in Perth. I'm not too sure what it's like over east, but I know there's a few Bizarros, over in Melbourne, or I think there's a few in Queensland or thereabouts. So I'm not sure if they've got a similar sort of dislocation where they're at, but I guess we'll see over the years if that starts to pick up.
It'd be nice. I know there's a handful of bizarre authors from like Portland and just the U.S. in general that have been making an effort to get over to Europe, and they've found there's attention there. Just recently, I spoke to Laura Lee Barr. I just spoke to her, and she said we were talking about a big presence that's growing in Spain now, and actually having Spanish language translations of the Bizarro books happening over there. How easy is it for you to just even get your hands on Bizarro books down there? Is it pretty easy digitally, or can you get the paperbacks pretty handily also?
The paperbacks, I pretty much just order them online. There's not too many bookstores that I'm aware of that stock Bizarro, so that's something I'd definitely like to work on. I don't have any issues getting ebooks. Getting them in online, paying a little bit more for shipping, but I guess that's a price you got to pay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I didn't even consider that because the stuff is there's no printers directly out of Australia yet for that to become cheaper for you.
Yeah, it's definitely a bit tricky at the moment. Because I think that's one thing that'll put off potential readers is not having that presence locally and having to pay a little bit extra to get the stuff ordered online.
What do you use to are you using an Amazon or a Kobo to get digital books?
I pretty much order everything for Kindle. Either that or pester the authors to send me a free ebook and promise that one day I'll get around to a review or something like that.
So it's the ebooks that are the way to go for you. They're easiest.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. And do you mind reading digital stuff, or do you have a preference for the paperback stuff?
I think it's actually pretty much 50-50. I recently just ordered Glue by Constance Ann Fitzgerald and Shit Luck by Tiffany Scandal. I got them in print just because they're two authors that I really like to have in the authentic paperbacks. I definitely do enjoy getting my Bizarro collection stocked up. It's just a matter of being able to afford it.
It's a little more expensive for you. I asked this question. This line of questioning leads up to just in a few days, you have a book launch party going on in your area for the Orphanarium. So that line of questioning leads up to asking how easy is it for you, or how difficult is it for you to get copies and stock copies of your own books? Because that's the pricing's got to be kind of astronomical for you.
Yeah, well, I've been really lucky with Razorhead Press with ordering my books because Rose has been able to track down a printer in Australia to send them straight. I think it's over in Sydney or Melbourne, so it's only coming from the eastern states as opposed to the other side of the world.
Oh, that's great.
So at least I'm not paying an arm and a leg for shipping.
Yeah. And does that also get you paperback distribution like regularly, or is that just somebody's printing on demand for you?
That's pretty much just print on demand.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's still cost-wise, that's pretty important. You know, tell us about the book launch party there. How's that? How are you finding interest in that? I mean, like you said, it's a little sparse there, the attention for Bizarro. So you're going out there. Where's it going to be, and what kind of crowd are you expecting?
Well, I've been in touch with a local science fiction bookshop called White Dwarf Books. I've done a poetry reading at that venue before, so I was just able to get in touch with the owner and sort out the details. And I'm just trying to use my connections in the poetry community to get a few readings lined up. I've got a few local poets that I get along with really well who will be there. I've got a guy called Scott Patrick Mitchell who I'm also publishing his poetry collection through my Hawkline Press. And then I've got Sana Pedden, I'm not sure how to say it, pronounce her last name, and a guy called Matthew Jameson. They're all fantastic poets, so they should help make the night a little bit more entertaining. And then I've just, invited a whole bunch of, poets and friends and family and work colleagues. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to fill up the venue easily enough.
That's pretty interesting, the poetry angle, because I don't really see, you don't actually have any poetry collections out there, do you? But it's a big thing for you.
Yes. I've got one poetry collection out. It's called Beautiful Madness.
Oh, okay.
I published it, I think, 2 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
It's been fairly quiet, that one, but I get a decent amount of positive feedback when I do hear back from people who have read it. In the meantime, I try to, hit up the poetry venues here and there, keep in touch with some of those guys, and try to network that way.
That's sort of your vehicle for getting yourself out there, presenting your work, is through poetry.
Yeah. Because, when I write poetry, I don't go for, like, all the typical, purple prose and metaphors and rhyming poetry, all the traditional stuff. My poetry is quite similar in style to my Bizarro prose.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep it very surreal. Most of my stuff has got specific narratives to them. So you can follow like the content of the poetry quite easily. So I think in that sense, delivering poetry readings is my way of introducing poets and people who enjoy poetry towards the bizarre worlds that I create.
And you're finding that other poets are being pretty receptive to the Bizarro work?
I think it's getting there, yeah.
Yeah.
The poetry that I write and perform compared to the poetry that's being read by others in the community, there's quite a stark contrast, but the community itself is very open and accommodating to all different styles, so it's great to connect to people that do hear my poetry and go, wow, that's interesting. Where else do you go with that?
Yeah, and it's so important to you that you've started your own press to help bring other poets that you enjoy, get them collections and books out there.
Yeah, so hopefully I'll be able to get the press launched later on in the year. It's been pretty hectic with a very steep learning curve, but I'm making steady progress, and I've got quite a few books lined up that I'm very excited about.
Is that you find that taking up maybe a little too much of your time? We're focusing on publishing others.
Yeah, definitely. it's been quite fortunate for myself, having had the Orphanarium lined up, ready to go for quite some time. and it's given me time to write a few other books here and there in the meantime. So at least I'll have plenty of my own writing to carry me forth until I do find the time to get back and write a few more books.
Well, it's a perfect setup to talk now about that latest book, The Orphanarium, from Eraserhead. Just want to tell us what it's all about and how it wound up with Eraserhead.
Well, this book has been a very long time coming. Compared to my other books, most of them were written in a few weeks to a couple of months. This one took a little over 2 years, and it started out as a 10,000-word novella or novelette, and it kind of gradually grew from there. It's a bizarro, surreal, sci-fi, prose poem, epic sort of thing. It's hard to describe because there's so many different layers to it. I've got a lot of experimentation with non-linear storytelling and shifting perspectives. And I think in that sense, the voice that I've got in this book is quite unique from my other works and also from the other bizarro works that are out there at the moment. So I'm interested to get a bit of feedback on it because I've definitely gone in much different direction.
Yeah, it does seem to stand in contrast to a lot of your other body of work. So I was wondering if that's like, do you feel like you've there's a certain maturity that's come of your writing, or was this just an experimental thing that's probably gonna stand alone, or is this really the style wise like a new direction you've grown into?
There's definitely been a shift in direction, but I'm not sure if that'll just be something that I'll leave at this one work or if I'll carry on to other works, like similar style, different content. But I guess like throughout the whole process of writing and editing and publishing The Orphanarium, in the meantime, I've still been writing stuff like Dave the Milkman or Kaiju Canyon. So stuff that is less, I guess, experimentally ambitious. Mm-hmm. And I'm still, keen on working on those shorter works or less chaotic works, I think is a good way to put it. Because, there's one idea that I'm working on at the moment that I really want to just knuckle down and write start to finish in like a writing marathon sort of style. That one's just pretty much a straight up anime inspired bizarro high school typical action thing.
Mm-hmm. Now with The Orphanarium, at what point did Eraserhead take interest and pick it up? What point in that, you know, the evolution of the story, was it not until it was as it is now to present it to them, or did they take off of a pitch they liked the idea?
If I remember correctly, I originally pitched the book to Lazy Fascist.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't quite the right fit for them. And then I think from there, Cameron Pierce referred the book to Rose. And I think I was trying to pitch it through Spike Marlow at the time. She was my point of contact when she was editing with Eraserhead.
Mm-hmm.
I think it kind of just met up in the middle. And then when she dropped out of Eraserhead, Rose picked it up, read it through a few times, and then we set to work from there.
Ah, very cool. So was it Rose that sort of egged on the evolution of that book to make it a little something more than where it was going?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I did deliver her a complete manuscript, but she had a lot of input in the editing process. She pretty much picked up on everything that didn't sit quite right. She demanded a lot out of me as a writer, and I think I learned a lot in the process as well. So it was, just a fantastic learning experience working directly with her.
And now you need to go and write that easy piece, that not easy piece, but something a little more less challenging.
Yeah.
Was it that challenge of the Orphanarium is like really why you need to kind of step back and write something a little more fun and loosey goosey?
Yeah, definitely. It was just, I'm super proud of what we've managed to pull together and publish through Razorhead. But it was a very long process, very exhausting. It took a lot out of me. Mentally, just trying to piece everything together in the initial writing process, and then in the editing process to go through all of that again and relive those memories and get even more out of the story. Definitely need to go back and unwind and have some fun and just belt those words down onto paper.
Do you think there could be another Orphanarium type book in you down the line?
Yeah, definitely. I know I've got a few works in the works. One in particular that I've written quite a chunk already, but that one there is kind of just sitting there waiting until the next big idea or the next piece in the puzzle falls into place, and I can get back into making a bit more progress with it.
So outside of that, right now, your main focus really is on being a publisher, and I guess you're not really writing too much at the moment, trying to take a breath from the Orphanarium.
Yeah, definitely not writing too much at the moment. If anything, I'll probably, try to write a bit more poetry here and there. Definitely want to make sure I do write by the authors that I've made commitments to with Hawkline Press. So I guess once that first batch of books is out into the world, I can try to, take a bit more time for myself and step back a little bit.
Now, do you need to write a little bit of something as much as you can, or can you really step away from writing and it doesn't bother you?
It doesn't bother me if I don't write anything. Like there's some writers that have to write every day, and I'm not one of those people. I can sit down and try to write. I can make sure I find the time to do a bit of plotting here and there. But if I don't get around to it, I'd be happy just, spending a day reading or, doing a bit of editing here and there. It's all progress one way or another.
Oh, that's good. I know there seems to be a lot of writers that really feel that they do need, to be that guy, write every day, write all the time and get something out on the page, and they really guilt themselves and punish themselves for, if they do miss that day and stuff. And I think it's like you said, it is okay to allow yourself that time to step away if you're not feeling it. So it's good that you, I don't know. It's been my experience. I didn't know, especially with are poets the same way? You still got to be writing all the time.
I think with poetry, it's a little bit different. I find a lot of poets write as a form of self-expression. So to them, it's not so much work as it's a matter of working out their own thoughts and feelings and that sort of stuff. I guess, with my own poetry, it's more like my writing where I'm not so much trying to find some sort of hidden meaning within myself. I'm just trying to write to have fun. So long as I'm enjoying what I'm doing, whether it's poetry or whether it's the next book that I'm working on. So long as I'm doing something creative with my time, that's all that matters.
Well, that's very, very cool. Shane Cartledge, we are just about out of time, but it's been a fantastic interview today, listening and learning all about you. We found out you're a poet today. I didn't know that. That was new for me. And that you have this new press going. That's really awesome stuff. Early feedback for the Orphanarium looks pretty good so far. Is that what you've had so far too?
Yeah. I guess I'll have a bit more feedback when I've got this launch out of the way, because then I'll have a lot more books in the hands of a lot more locals.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'll be able to get feedback directly from them, see what they think. At least for the time being, I've just been blown away by the fact that Rose was so captivated by it that she was more than happy to pick it up and put all this effort into putting it together and doing such a fantastic job getting that cover for it.
Yeah, the book looks great. The book sounds great. And hearing the all the time and effort that's been put into it, it sounds like maybe it's almost like a little baby boy or girl that you just had and birthed it out into the world, and now you get to see it kind of grow up, see what happens with it.
Yeah, definitely. My other books definitely weren't as intense as this one. So I'm just glad that it's published and that it's got the time and effort put into it that it deserves. And now it's out of my hands.
That's it. Now it's the world. So get out there on March 31st. You're having that book launch party. So if you're in Shane's neck of the wood, get out and go meet him, grab a book and check out all the other cool poetry stuff he's doing and all the other poets that he's working with.
Please. Yeah, for sure.
Shane Cartledge, thank you very much for joining us here on Bazong this week. We wish you the best with the Orphanarium and everything else you have coming up down the line.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Mr. Shane S.T. Cartledge Zongers. Fantastic to hear somebody down in Australia. Like I said earlier, the theme we keep running into is Bizarro is... it's a worldwide thing now, and more so. I just keep finding myself talking to writers from other countries outside the U.S., and it's very inspiring, to say the least. Of course, check out Shane's The Orphanarium, just released from Eraserhead Press, and a couple of the other books that we talked about in the interview. Of course, The Four Men, The Four Gentlemen of the Apocalypse is a really cool four novellas length story collection that Shane is in alongside of Arthur Brown and Douglas Hackle and Dustin Reed, of course. Like I said, kind of a slightly unnoticed book that should deserves a little more recognition. So something else to consider picking up. And Day of the Milkmen, too. We didn't talk about it in the interview. Day of the Milkman by S.T. Cartledge. Also, another cool book out there to check out all his work, see what he's doing out there in Zongerland. Speaking of Zongerland, Zongers, don't forget Project Entertainment Network's Patreon page. You can contribute as little as a dollar to. And as I've said before, each month I do a video Bizarro book spotlight, and March's video spotlight is coming up on March 31st, right at the end of the month. So now's your chance to hop on and donate as little as a dollar a month and get access to those Bazong video Bizarro book spotlights and other videos and added content from all the hosts of the Project Entertainment Network podcast. And if you want to donate, you got $3 a month, you can enter to win show notes, not just from Bazong, but from all the other Project Entertainment Network shows, including the horror show with a Brian Keene. But of course, if you do win Bazong show notes, you get the Bazong doodles right there with them. Of course, those are not reproductions. They are one of a kind original show notes that I use to conduct the interviews here on Bazong. They are no longer in my possession. They are with Mr. Armand Rosamilia, curator of the Project Entertainment Network, and he awards those show notes monthly to those who contribute at that Patreon campaign level. So consider, if you got a couple extra bucks sitting around, you can get some value-added content from all the shows on the Project Entertainment Network. And Bazong has a t-shirt available at the Project Entertainment Network website. We just adjusted the original t-shirt design we put up last week. Looks a little bit better now. A little less clunky looking, shall we say. And it's available in a variety of colors. There's red, green, blue, gray, several colors you can pick from, several styles. Of course, they have women's t-shirts as well. And mugs, Bazong mugs. Get yourself a Bazong coffee mug. Something else to consider when you visit Project Entertainment Network's website. And if you want to keep on considering Project Entertainment Network stuff, why don't you consider advertising your product, yourself, or your wares right here on Bazong or in the other great shows on the Project Entertainment Network. For a very minimal fee, you can present your product, yourself, your wares right here on Bazong or the other great shows on the Project Entertainment Network. Just go to projectentertainment.com, click on the advertising banner, and find out how easy and simple it is to advertise on the network. And don't forget, just because you're paying for one advertisement doesn't mean it just lasts once for a week. Podcasts last forever, and they get replayability often. I've said shows going back months and months and months ago to the early days when Bazong was just starting are still getting play. So if you kick back money back then for an advertisement, you'd still have people hearing your ad to this day. Something to consider when you're considering advertising your stuff. And Zongers, I don't want to hold you up much further than that. So I will let you go to enjoy the rest of your week. Thank you for giving up an hour of your time to join us here on Bazong. And now you are free to go and listen to these other great Project Entertainment Network podcasts.
13 o'clock, the hour of the weird and unexplained. Join your hosts, Jenny Ashford and Tom Ross, as they take you on an entertaining journey through the mysteries of the world and the universe. Paranormal, true crime, conspiracies, unexplained phenomena.
Listen to 13 o'clock on the Project Entertainment Network and find us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at 13 o'clock podcast.
Rated R.
I'm Captain Ballersley, and I'm one of them characters in the Curtain Jerks, Project Entertainment Network's pro wrestling podcast. Every Friday, Token Talk, Lord Steve Mesa, and the Viking, Superkick Pro Wrestling in the Hot Spot. Featuring interviews with the up-and-coming indie superstars that are stable and shoots while it works. You can only hear them on the Project Entertainment Network. Thank you very much. Remember the Alamo!
It was a time when we raced to the TV guide to see what was playing on Monster Movie Matinee that Saturday afternoon, and in some cities, that evening. It was all about werewolves, vampires, giant lizards, and those great Japanese monster movies. Relive it all every week as Jim Adams and Mark Maddox bring you Monster Attack. Monster Attack takes a look at those classic monster movies that we all grew up loving. Join us every week on Monster Attack, exclusively on the Project Entertainment Network.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.